Yeah, we all have standards for that stuff.
I'm sure you do.
You know what?
I'd like to call this meeting to order. This is the Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. It's Wednesday, October 14th, 2015 at 4:30 p.m. We are at the Community Center Sierra Room, 851 East William Street, Carson City, Nevada. Note, the CAMPO is pleased to make reasonable accommodations for members of the public who are disabled and wish to attend the meeting. If special arrangements for the meeting are necessary, please notify Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization staff in writing at 3505 Buddeye Way, Carson City, Nevada, 89701, or comments at carsonareampo.com or call Patrick Pittinger at 775-887-2355 as soon as possible. Requests for this meeting were required before prior to 12 p.m. on October 12, 2015. For more information regarding any of the items listed on the agenda, please contact Patrick Pittinger, Transportation Manager, at 775-887-2355. Additionally, the agenda will, with all the supporting materials, posted on the CAMPO website at www.carsonareampo.com or is available upon request at 3505 Buddeye Way, Carson City, Nevada. The agenda. Item A is roll call and determination of quorum.
Chairperson Fierro.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Erb.
Here.
Member Bonkowski.
Here.
Member Kroll.
Here.
Member Kimbrough.
Here.
Member McQuarrie.
Here.
Member Smolenski.
Here.
Ex officio Member Rosenberg.
Here.
Quorum is present.
All right. Thank you. Item B is public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the MPO may approach the podium and speak on matters related to the MPO. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person per topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please request the chair to calendar the matter for a future MPO meeting. No action may be taken upon a matter raised under this item of the agenda until the matter itself has been specifically included on an agenda as an item upon which action may be taken. Is there anybody in the audience today that came forward, that wants to come forward under public comment? Seeing none, we'll move on to item C for possible action, approval of minutes. C1, for possible action, action to approve the minutes of July 8th, 2015 meeting. Do I have a motion on that?
I move to approve the minutes of July 8th, 2015 as presented.
Second. Second. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. C2. For possible action, action to approve the minutes of August 12th, 2015 meeting.
I move to approve the minutes of August 12th, 2015 as presented.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. D, agenda management notice. Items on the agenda may be taken out of order. CAMPO may combine two or more agenda items for consideration. And CAMPO may remove an item from agenda or delay discussion related to an item on the agenda at any time. E, disclosures. Any member of the MPO that may wish to explain any contact with the public regarding an item on the agenda or business of the MPO. Is there anybody that has any disclosures? All right, hearing none. Going on to item F, which is our public meeting items. Start off with F1, which is presentation on Washoe County's experience with gas tax indexing by Lee Gibson, the Chief Executive Officer of the Regional Transportation Commission of Washoe County RTC. Staff summary, in 2008, Washoe County voters approved a ballot question to increase the gas tax annually based on what the producer's price index does each year. Mr. Gibson will share Washoe County's experience with gas tax indexing and discuss the impact this has had on local and regional transportation projects.
I'm just going to introduce him just for a moment, just a couple of words. Very happy to have Lee Gibson here with us today because not only they are a neighboring county or big brother to the north, they have lots of experience with gas tax indexing here in Nevada, in fact, more than anybody else. We specifically asked him to come to our Campo meeting because we do have three counties represented here, all of which will have a vote on the ballot next November for possible gas tax indexing. And while ours would be implemented slightly different than Washoe County, we're very happy to have their insights as we move forward. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the Metropolitan Planning Organization, for the record, I'm Lee Gibson. I'm very happy to be here today. We consider you all our partners. We jointly operate intercity service between Carson City and Reno, and I'm very happy to tell you that as I was driving in, that bus was packed, and I'm glad to see those packed buses. What I want to do today is, and it'll be a little painful, and I apologize for that, but I'm going to walk you through some of the history, some of the mechanics, and then I will talk a little bit about the results we've received with respect, or results we've obtained with the fuel tax indexing program, or is now, I think the new buzzword is fuel revenue indexing. So bear with me as I go through this. Here's some basics about RTC, probably very similar to what you have created by a county ordinance. We administer three major programs, the street and highway program, the public transportation program, and the MPO function. We, as you do, maintain a 20-year regional transportation plan. Indeed, I think we coordinate the preparation of our regional transportation plans to ensure connectivity and coordination of services between the two MPO jurisdictions. The original fuel taxes were set forth in state law. The real bottom line point here is in Washoe County, does that have a little arrow? In Washoe County, we started out with a 4 cent a gallon fuel tax. Then we jumped it to 5 cents in 1994, by 5 cents to bring us to 9 cents total by April of 1994. The maximum an RTC can have in the state, to my understanding and knowledge, is 9 cents. And I think the two metropolitan areas in Carson are at the full 9 cents now. So that's kind of an important point. Now, one of the things with fixed excise taxes is that's just it. It's fixed. You set it to 9 cents a gallon. You'll have 9 cents of purchasing power in year one. You might have 8.8 cents of purchasing power in year two. You might have 8.6 cents of purchasing power in year three, and so on and so forth. In other words, it's a fixed rate, and it doesn't keep up with inflation. And that's really the crux of the challenge, not just with transportation, highway funding here in Nevada, but nationwide, because we've been living under a fixed federal fuel tax that was established, I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, Patrick, what, 93? Long time for that 18.4 cents of the federal gas tax to have stayed at that level, because as you'll see later in my presentation, the traditional drivers of fuel tax revenue aren't what they used to be, as my grandmother used to say. We have a lot of history with indexing, starting back in 2002. In 2002, the voters in Washoe County were presented with a fair share funding package that included increasing sales taxes, half of which a 1/8 cent sales tax increase, 1/16 of that went to public transportation, 1/16 went to road maintenance. There was also an effort to index at 9 cents a gallon to the consumer price index. Now, consumer price index is a economic index that really looks at price fluctuations and the things we buy at Costco or at Smith's or at CVS or whatever drugstore. And those are the consumer consumables, and that index monitors those. That has been a traditionally flat index over the last several years, and that has had implications for the highway sector as we experienced. What it did do between 2003 and 2009 was bring our base rate, and I'll define kind of what a base rate is, to 10.562 cents per gallon by 2009. One of the things that we noted at RTC during that period was, and if we all kind of go back in time and think about Nevada at that point, we were really growing. I mean, if you think about what happened between 01, 02 to 08, 07, 08, we were really growing like gangbusters. At that time, just this is maybe a little bit of personal comment. At that time, I was working in the private sector for an engineering firm, and I remember the structural engineers were running around saying, you know, you can't write a steel quote that's worth the paper it's written on because it just changed like that because of inflationary forces globally. So in the research that the RTC did, the determination was made that the CPI was not the proper index to really preserve and maintain the purchasing power of a fuel tax. It was really the producer price index. So in 2008, the RTC board approved and put forward to the voters what's called RTC 5. And this was to do several things. One, it was to change the index to producer price index to better reflect those changes in construction materials. Two, it spread the application of indexing across a number of taxes, including taxes on gasoline, diesel, special fuels, as well as the state and the federal fuel tax. And those are important components with respect to what I'm going to talk about, because the political frustration that was experienced in Washoe County was what we're still experiencing today at the national level, the inability of Congress to pass a long-term and heightened increased or an increased set of revenues for us to build and operate and maintain our transportation system in this nation. So voters in Washoe County were presented with that option to say, you know what, we're going to take the bull by the horns, and we're going to do what Congress can't do, and I'll even throw in an even further editorial comment, we will do what the state legislature isn't doing, and that's helping NDOT continue to fund its program. Its fuel taxes have been set. And so that was part of the logic of why we included the NDOT option fuel tax in that formula. We went to the voters. Now, again, maybe a little more political history than you may want, but you know, that was a really challenging time, that 08, 09 period. We were starting to tip in to the Great Recession, and I think I find very admirable at that point that the voters actually said, hey, you know what, we are not going to let our infrastructure deteriorate. We are not going to let jobs, because what was going on at that time was fuel prices were going up. You know, they were saying, "Hey, we're not going to go to the pump and create jobs in Houston. We're going to go to the pump and create some jobs maybe here in Washoe County." So that whole package went to the voters. It was approved. SB 201 went to the legislature. They passed it, and we then went to the Washoe County in accordance with how RTCs are designed and developed the implementing ordinance, and we put it into effect in January of 2010. So we started out with a base of 10.562 cents. That is kind of a, if hopefully the mayor won't report me to the bar, I'll maybe practice a little law here. The 10.56 cents is, or 10.5621 cents is the base rate. So remember where we ended up with the CPI. We ended up at that 10.56 number. That is what we have. Now, legally, one could come back through the legislative process and change that base rate. So that base rate could change and that could increase, and that would be, if you will, the principal we would then charge to. But that's really a kind of an esoteric thing, but that's why we call it the base rate. What we did with the federal and state rates, if you go read the statute, we just wrote them into the law at 18.445. So if the feds changed let's just say Congress came along and added a nickel to the federal gas tax and brought it to 23 cents, we would still, by law, only index against the 18.4 cents of the federal gas tax. So, and same thing with the state gas tax. If the legislature raised the 18.445 to, say, 20 cents, we would still only index the 18.445. Now, Washoe County residents would still pay, again, Sandra, let's just arguably say it was raised to 20 cents, would still pay that incremental 2 cents. But the formula calculation would only be back to the 18.4 cents. We also apply it to special fuels. We apply it to diesel. CNG liquefied, and that brings us up to our total collection. I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. This is sort of a spreadsheet that gives you a sense of how it's calculated. You can see the 10.5621 base rate, the Washoe County option. We apply the index to it, and we sum it up, and we get to the total. And I'll give you that new total for 2015 here in just a moment. This is maybe another way of looking. Oh, this is another important point. So the PPI that we use is an average that goes back in 10 years in time. So the first time we did this was really look back from 08 to 1999. You can see some of those increases there, especially in 05, 06, where really a lot of pressure was placed in producer items in the commodities markets that really eroded the ability of us to buy infrastructure, if you will. So that 10-year average, and this is just an example from 2010, was about 6.2. Today, this is where we are in Washoe County. You pull up to the pump. RTC's option is now 33 cents a gallon, basically. The Washoe County mandatory, that is an allocation off the top through state law, goes straight to Washoe County, then split with the entities that goes to road maintenance. That's now at 10 cents, almost 11 cents. State tax is still 18.45. Right now, the total fuel tax level in Washoe County is 80 cents. That's what it is. So that's what the feds collect, what the state collects, and then what we collect. And let me just give you a couple of numbers to give you a sense here. For our 2015 14 budget, we were able to generate $14.5 million on the base, $35 million from the index, for a total of $49.5 million. That $49.5 million is our total in Washoe County that we use to help pay debt and also operate our road programs. A lot of that money right now is going towards the Southeast Connector. That phase that's left to be built is about $154 million proposition. So that's where a lot of that money is going to go. This gives you a sense of where we've gone now to 2015 in terms of the amount of money that motor vehicle fuel taxes have generated. So it's pretty substantial. This is a slide. I'm going to kind of now walk you through some slides about just general travel characteristics and some of the benefits. Maybe I ought to stop right now and just ask you, are there any questions about sort of the mechanics of how this works?
What does the producer price index measure?
It measures changes in the prices of things that are used in, like, steel. There's a labor component for the construction sector. It's those types of factors that would go into production. Concrete, fuel actually goes back into that calculation. There's a little bit of I believe economists like to use the term recursiveness here. There's a little bit of a feedback loop. If fuel prices go up, that goes into the producer price index. That feeds that. You know, one of the things construction activities have, or bottom line issue about construction activities, is those activities consume a lot of fuel. And so that goes into that equation. Those are the types of items. Does that answer your question?
What was the vote in Reno or in Washoe County?
Michael, do you remember? 54. It was 54% approval in November of 08.
Sure. Does the ag diesel get treated the same as just regular diesel, the one that they dye?
That I don't know.
Okay.
I will say on diesel, there is a mechanism for, and I should know more about this, but there is a mechanism that was created in the last legislative session for the RTC of Southern Nevada that sort of provides for a rebate, if you will, on how truckers can get their money back. It's sort of modeled after the IFTA, the International Fuel Tax Agreement. That's an agreement between Canada, the United States, the states, Mexico. Sandra probably knows more about it than I do. But anyway, it's a way to help balance and equalize fuel taxes for interstate truckers. So what we've been seeing is a slow increase in the rate of VMT, and that's because this slide is really what's driving, if you will, a change in how we really need to fund transportation. Fuel efficiency is going up. As fuel efficiency goes up, go back to this slide, even though people may drive more, we collect less. And this is a historic and projected gallon sale. So if we did an index, that's the way our revenue curve would look. We'd be going down. So we would be eroding our ability to provide infrastructure. So let me kind of walk you through this again. We're seeing a continual increase in the demand for roadway space. People are driving more. People I know people who are getting these hybrids and they're driving more and more because it's cheaper. So people will do more. But what's happening is they're buying less and less gas. So drive more, buy less gas. States, the federal government, RTCs capture less and less revenue. With that increasing demand, we are losing our ability to provide the infrastructure that they're demanding. So the change in demand is increasing, but the supply of resources is eroding. And that just creates, you know, an economic nightmare. These are some of the highest, these are some just kind of indicators of Reno area highest recorded average fuel prices. And I do have some data for this year, and I wish I had something to project this on. But we've seen a high of around 3.9 cents in March of 14, down to 2.6 cents in December of 14. So, I'm sorry, that was an average price of $3.9 per gallon down to, and I'm doing this real quick, down to 2.3. So there's been a lot of fluctuation in fuel prices. And I think that's this trend analysis, and it is a couple of years old, does show overall a downward trend. So what are the benefits? Why would you do this? And I know it's very difficult to go ask people to pay more for public services, but let me talk to you a little bit about what we've been able to do in Washoe County. First off, we are really helping to build a much more, in our minds, a livable community and promoting livability and regional connectivity. One of my comments that one of the challenges I think we face in Washoe County is just creating a connected roadway system. One of the things the Southeast Connector is really going to provide is much better connectivity east of 395, 580, as well as a reliever to the 395, 580 and Spaghetti Bowl. But being able to help move people who live in the Damani Ranch area, Carson City, help move people up to the retail and job opportunities in and off I-80 there at Sparks Boulevard. I think more importantly, we have what I call economically challenged neighborhoods up off of Sparks Boulevard, and guess what Southeast Connector does? That helps them get the jobs and get to some of the manufacturing jobs that are growing in the South Reno area. So that, you know, livability, by the way, to me means getting a job, being able to buy a house, pay your mortgage. It can be a lot of aesthetic things and recreational things, but it also is about having a good, efficient transportation system to help us have people sustain themselves economically. We're also doing a lot to improve safety. We're creating jobs, and we're also doing a lot of leveraging. We've issued four bonds. We've issued bonds totaling almost $450 million. That's helped us do a lot of regional streets. We've partnered with NDOT. There's a nice big wide freeway. I like to joke with my friends in Southern Nevada that actually the widest freeway segment is right over my old office there at Villanova, because we partnered with NDOT and widened that freeway and used our resources for that. So that's really the other thing it's done, and I don't have a slide to this effect in here. It has allowed us to leverage and obtain discretionary capital funds from the federal government, from the USDOT. We were awarded one of the state's highest Tiger grants for the Fourth Prater project because we were able to bring the local resources to the project. And the feds, when they see the local resources being brought, they say, you know what, we'll reward you with federal resources. So we're very, very proud of that. We've gone through our regional transportation plan process. We've looked at funding for projects from all of those different sources. These are our bonds I just talked about. Real quick here, our debt coverage. This is a good help. My finance director loves this slide because our revenues are going up, but our debt service is staying constant. So we're reducing, we're slowly reducing our amount of our budget that goes to debt and helping us move back to a pay-as-you-go system of improving our transportation system. Here are some projects. I'm sure you're all familiar with many of them. There's the 580 widening there at Milana Lane to I-80. We completed the Vista Boulevard widening, Southeast McCarran widening phase one. Southeast McCarran widening phase two is going to open, I think, next month. Veterans Parkway, Geiger Grade, roundabout, the Southeast Connector. Many of you may have seen the bridge. So we're really proud. We got did a nice job on Plum Lane. So one of the things I think is important is if you look at that rehabilitation reconstruction project, $193 million has gone into that program. So of almost half of what we have generated in leverage funds is really helping us rehab and reconstruct a lot of our existing infrastructure. And that's where we've been going back in and seeing a lot of improvements to our sidewalk system, our pedestrian system, our bicycle system, and really helping to create and sustain the viability, especially of some of the older neighborhoods where we see the streets having maybe been neglected for a while. When we come back in and do some of these pedestrian, bicycle, and roadway improvements, we see, this is just anecdotal, but I think we actually help add to the value of people's homes in the area, help them build equity, becomes a choice neighborhood, and people who are moving here, and we are seeing people move, really now have some good choices and great choices on how and where to live. Again, partnering with NDOT, we've worked very closely on the Pyramid McCarran project. We are able to bring our planning models with shared services to a higher level because we have the resources to maybe partner and do some more exciting and interesting things. We use CMAR. These are just some of the things we've been able to do. Complete Streets, $193 million, really helps us fund that Complete Street program, and the crash reduction has been one of the biggest things I think we've been able to provide for the community in terms of safety by reducing the crashes on streets by 30 to 45%. And the crashes we do have are less severe. So that means not quite the impact to people's insurance premiums and certainly not the health care costs because you're not getting the severe injuries. So we still have unfunded needs. Patrick has heard me and Sandra's heard me talk about, it's really not in this presentation, but you know, one of the areas we are going to have to face as a state, as a metropolitan area, is the question of public transportation and how we fund that. And that's kind of where I'll summarize. Our indexing was voter approved. The voters knew what they were doing. We had a very aggressive education campaign. And I think it's important to remember the voters approved this as we were going in to the Great Recession. The voters, I think when people know challenging times are coming, people realize that stepping up to the plate and making an investment in the community is one way to get through the challenging times. And I think what we're seeing, not just in Washoe County, but all throughout our region, that investment we were able to make is, I think, helping bring the diversification in our economy that we're all seeing. PPI, again, as we talked about earlier, is a better measurement of construction inflation. The leveraging has been really advantageous for us. We still have a shortfall, but as someone I once knew used to say, we're working on it. So I'll be happy to answer any questions. I know that was a long presentation. I guess I'm out of my jurisdiction, so I can say this. I encourage you to embrace indexing. We have a national problem in transportation, and we're not solving it at the national level, period. I'm not sure they're going to solve it. You know, we all watch and see what goes on in Congress and Washington, and our congressional delegation across party lines works very hard, very diligently, Senator Reid, Senator Heller, all of the representatives in Congress, but I'm just not seeing, you know, I go back there a couple, three times a year, I'm just not seeing movement. And if we're going to sustain ourselves as a region, I encourage you to look at this, I encourage you to embrace it, and let's move forward as a region. So that's just my kind of personal plug. So with that, I'll shut up.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody that has questions for Mr. Gibson? Go ahead.
My primary question has to deal with before the ballot, which is, did you, Carson City's pretty small staff. Did you have a staff position or an advocacy group up front helping support the billboards, the education in the newspaper, the articles that go out so that they were informed. Because that seemed to be a big element in making sure they understand that. And this is a pretty small staff maybe to put a full-time person involved with this, but I would bet you guys had a budget, a staff person, and an advocacy group, maybe the AGC or something like that. Maybe you could address that part.
Yes, I will. And let me just comment about staff first. I mean, staff has some restrictions on it by law. We can only educate. We cannot advocate. But there was a sort of coalition formed. The AGC was at the center of that coalition. I believe they provided the organizational resources. So they were the ones that, and again, I'll just be very direct. You know, if there was fundraising that was engaged in, which there was, they served as the organizational framework to do that. They helped develop the ads and the billboards, the educational pieces. What if you had X dollars, what could be built? That's what RTC staff provided. So we were able to show in sort of plannaries, and I'm assuming because you're the MPO board, you speak a little plannaries, we were able to show the closing of the gap between with the unfunded needs in our plan and show how that gap as it closed would help, one, create jobs, and two, help improve connectivity and reduce travel congestion and improve livability and quality of life. So,
who went to the AGC, or did the AGC come to you, or did you guys just like call a meeting and say, let's talk about this and then look for their leadership maybe?
I think the AGC, the elected officials, the staff, they'd all been going through the regional plan process. They'd recognized these shortfalls. They recognized the problems in Washington, and they came together. Yeah, we're a small community too. You know, we all know and talk to each other, and I think it was that bringing together of everyone to really focus on the question that really energized the AGC and the private sector to come forward and say, let's do this.
Are there any other questions?
Go ahead. First of all, thank you, Mr. Gibson, for coming and presenting to us. It's always enjoyable to listen to you speak. And I applaud both Clark County and Washoe County, the fortitude to go after another funding mechanism, which is very much needed nationwide. First of all, I'd like to request if you would come and speak before Douglas County Planning, our Board of County Commissioners, maybe after the first of the year. We're tackling right now just trying to get from 4 cents to 9 cents, and hopefully that is going to get approved here soon. I guess my question would, after that, my question is, with the idea of vehicle miles traveled becoming a taxable idea, how does the indexing play into that? Would you be able to get the same amount of revenue if that does come into play in the future?
My answer to that question is I have absolutely no idea, and I'll tell you why. I think there's a lot of risks that still have to be addressed with a VMT tax or fee. I know I was involved in a VMT study 4 years ago, and then, you know, my phone over here, you know, that technology just changed overnight, because in that time there was this real concern about, oh, I don't want the government to know where I'm traveling. Well, you know, probably the National Security Agency and the CIA know where I am right now. So there's still implementation issues, distribution issues that have to be worked out in VMT. I think we're a long way away from a VMT tax. I mean, my idea on VMT was pretty simple. You know, we all go and get smogged, or at least I get smogged in Washoe County. You know, how come someone's just not charging me a little bit of money there? I don't know, but I think we're a long way away. We're going to be reliant on the fuel tax. And I go back to my slide. I'm going to play economist here. You know, the burden that people are paying is really because of gallons sold going down, fuel efficiency going up. As we raise these fuel taxes, and that's what they are, households, in my opinion, and this is belief, are really still not, they're not seeing their amount that they're dedicating going up. They're actually kind of holding their own, in my belief, because they're just getting, you know, they're driving hybrids, and you can get, you know, 41 to 50 miles per gallon. So couple more cents a year, you're still getting a pretty good deal for the amount of infrastructure you buy. So VMT's going up, fuel efficiency is improving, but those revenues, if you don't index, are going down. So you can't buy as much as you used to. So we got to do something. VMT would be the way to go theoretically, but we're a long way away. Sandra might disagree.
Well, on a note on that area, I saw today that Toyota has announced that they want to go 100% electric cars by 2050. So then, you know, there will be a lot more electric cars on the road and not purchasing gas. So eventually something has to change, I think.
You know, and again, I that to me would require a dialogue with utilities
right.
and approach it from maybe that angle. So.
Okay.
Any
and I'm
questions?
Happy to come down to Douglas County. That's not a problem.
Go ahead.
Oh, since, thank you. I appreciate that.
Since John brought it up, I'll just give you my two cents carefully about indexing and VMT. To me, it's kind of a different conversation. I do agree with Mr. Gibson that VMT is probably a long way out. There's a lot of questions we need to answer. The indexing solves the inflation issue. It doesn't solve the fuel efficiency issue, which will continue to build another gap between the needs. So we're just not getting as far behind if we can index, but there's another issue to deal with. The corporate average fuel economy standards are going up to, is it 50,
yep.
50 something 51, by 2025. So
that's 10 years, that's 10 years from now.
Essentially a doubling of the average fuel economy of the cars on the roads now in 10 years. So this is part of the dialogue. We're going to continue to have discussions about how we fund transportation in the future. But this is something we can do relatively soon that helps.
Mr. Chairman, can I just add a little fact for Carson City? When we look at our gallons of gas sold and resultant gas tax, last fiscal year ended, we did have a slight uptick in the amount of gallons sold, but it is still well below what we sold in 2006, 7, 8, or 9. That was really our peak, and we're still substantially below what we used to sell.
Well, once again, thank you, Mr. Gibson, for your presentation.
Well, I guess I'll see you in Douglas County.
Yes, I'll get a hold of you and say
okay,
that.
Great. Thank you.
All right, that was a non-action item, so we're going to move on to F2 for possible action to approve an update to the Title VI program that incorporates a system-wide service standard manual section. Staff summary, recommend that the update be approved and the proposed system-wide service standards manual be incorporated as attachment E to the existing Title VI program.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as a brief background, the Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 protects people from discrimination based on race, color, or national origin in programs or activities that receive federal financial assistance. This update to CAMPO's Title VI program will actually be the final corrective action for the findings of the recent triennial review. CAMPO's Title VI plan was found to be lacking one element, which was a relatively newly added requirement. This system-wide service standards manual, which is the lacking element, has been prepared and pre-approved by the FTA civil rights officer currently assigned to our region. So should be okay by the feds. So with that, I'll take any questions you may have.
All right, is there any questions? Okay, if there aren't any questions, then I'll ask for someone to make a motion.
I move to approve an update to the Title VI program that incorporates a system-wide service standards manual section.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded.
Did you ask for public comment?
I always ask for public comment after the motion's made. So at this time, I'm going to ask for public comment. Is there anybody from the public? I see a shake of head no. So we're going to go forward with the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. All right, we're going to move on to item F3, information on staff's progress on 2040 regional transportation plan. Staff summary, Staff has begun working on the 2040 Regional Transportation Plan as part of Campo's fiscal year 2016 Unified Planning Work Program. Since July, staff has met with representatives from Douglas and Lyon, has begun development of the transportation demand model, and has met with the state and regional partners to develop consistent performance measures. A public participation meeting to kick off the new plan has been scheduled for October 20th, 2015 at the Community Center.
Thank you, Dirk Warren, for the record. So, yep, this is an informational item, and we've began working on the 2040 Regional Transportation Plan. We're required to do it every 5 years. So as we begin to kick off the transportation plan, we started to work on our transportation demand model. So we have a consultant, and we're working with them to build assumptions and put information into the model so that we get a good model. As part of that, we've met with Douglas County staff and Lyon County staff to talk about major projects that have happened in the past since our last transportation plan, as well as what they're expecting in the future. We've talked up to them about significant changes in land use so that we can put that better data into our model. We've also started talking with NDOT and FHWA, and included in those conversations are some new federal regulations that we're going to be implementing into this transportation plan. So Campbell staff, as well as other MPOs throughout the country, are working on these new federal requirements to kind of implement them. The 25-year plan will show cost and revenue projections, so we'll make some assumptions and have a fiscally constrained plan so that we'll have projects out for the next 25 years, but all those projects that are proposed in the plan are fiscally constrained based on assumptions of cost and revenue. Public involvement. We're starting our public involvement process next Tuesday, the 20th. In addition to having updates to the Campo board throughout the process, we're going to hold probably three public planning meetings. So the first one is going to be next Tuesday at the Community Center from 4 to 6. We've put ads in the paper of the Nevada Appeal, and any more press would be great. So in addition, we put together a survey, and it's a short survey, so about 12 or 13 questions. There's a link on our website to that survey, and that link was also posted in the newspaper. And that survey is going to hopefully help us gauge concerns and priorities. So in addition, we're working with all the other MPOs throughout the state. So we're working with RTC of Washoe, RTC of Clark, and making sure that we have consistency throughout the state. And we're also working with NDOT in that process. So that's all I have right now. So if there's any questions, the website to the survey is carsonareampo.com. So if you go there, there's a link right there, and there's also information on the public meeting that we're going to have on Tuesday.
So. Thank you. Are there any questions? Oh, I'm going to ask a question. So we're going out to 2040. So is there modeling for the area that the MPO covers expanding out into Douglas and Lyon?
Yeah, the tribal model will include areas that are within the MPO boundary, and then I don't know if Dan wants to add to that.
Sure. Just when we established the Metropolitan Planning Area, the MPA is what they call it, which that when we established that, we're basically looking out always into a 20-year horizon anyway. And a lot of times we don't really reevaluate it until the decennial census, because that is what defines our urbanized area. So the last decennial census in 2010, we kind of looked at the MPO boundaries in Douglas County at that time and expanded it to a more logical boundary. And we didn't make any changes with Lyon County, because I think it was just the year before the request was to push those boundaries out to encompass Dayton as well. So that area should, you know, relatively be within our 20-year planning horizon.
Okay, any further questions? Patrick?
I just want to mention that this isn't, you know, directly related to the regional transportation plan, but it is definitely associated with it. Our modeling does cover the area that Dan just discussed. Washoe primarily covers Washoe, as you might imagine. And we have this very large development that's going on out in Story County. And we are actually having a meeting, just continued coordination with the Nevada Department of Transportation and other partners, including Washoe, about coordinating all of our different modeling efforts. And we're specifically going to talk about how to make sure that we account for the development that's happening out in the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Park.
All right, thank you. All right, any further questions, comments? Okay, go ahead, Brad.
Just a question on what Patrick just said. Is that going to include conversations about the connection between Highway 50 at Opal and getting down to Ramsey Weeks, the section that would be South Opal that right now is just a gravel road? Because we've had conversations at the NDOT level, and there seems to be some questions about how that would occur and who's going to be responsible for it.
Well, I'll tell you that the specific focus of the meeting that I referred to is the travel demand modeling and the coordination of those. But the good news is that we have a senior official from the Nevada Department of Transportation right over here. And while she may not be directly responsible, since she's the Assistant Director of Planning, we can certainly work to make sure that those discussions are taking place when and where appropriate, even if it's not at this particular meeting.
Yeah, I'll have to follow up on that. I know there have been discussions. I don't know that we have an official stance yet on what that extension might be or where it might be or who maintains it. So in terms of the timing for the regional transportation plan, we'll have to see where we are with that and get back to you. So
I think the official stance was that until the RFPs come back for the widening of Highway 50 and USA Parkway to be completed, that they don't really want to have that conversation publicly.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
All right. Anybody else? Okay. We're going to move on to item G, which is internal communications and administrative matters. G1, future agenda items.
We actually, at the moment, have a couple of items for a future meeting. We're going to see if we need to do it in November. If we determine that we don't need to do those items in November, we will delay those to December, as the Carson RTC is having a joint meeting with RAC that needs to be time specific. If we need to have the Campo meeting, we will. If we find out we can delay it, then those items, then we won't have one until December.
All right. Thank you, Patrick. Item H is board comments, status reports, and comments from the members of the Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization Board. Are there any members that have any? We'll start down here.
Just to follow on the heels of the conversation about the RTP, NDOT will be releasing an RFP for our statewide multimodal long-range plan. And so, as was mentioned, we have formed a really great partnership with all of the MPOs and NDOT and the Federal Highway Administration to coordinate on the timing of the long-range plans at the regional and state level, the assumptions in there, because the idea is each of the MPO is now on the same update schedule. That's all going to roll into our statewide long-range plan, consistent performance measures, consistent timelines, consistent assumptions, to really have a kind of a unified vision for transportation needs throughout the state. So we have our work cut out for us going ahead, but we will also be hiring a consultant to look at the statewide level in coordination with your efforts.
I have a question. I don't know if it's outside the boundaries of the agenda and the legal part of this meeting, but I'm curious about what Campo plays, what role they play in the indexing with Carson City Lion and Douglas having to decide whether they're going to support. How does Campo play a role in that? Is it just come to us and say, would we vote for that as a committee, or how does that fit into our role as Campo? So that may not be able to be answered since it's not on the agenda, but I was just looking for that question.
Okay. District Attorney's Office says I can answer. as I mentioned in my introduction, We were inspired to have Mr. Gibson come and talk to Campo because, you know, we thought it would be appropriate to make sure that we had the Nevada Department of Transportation and both the other counties represented as well, because all three counties will certainly have the opportunity to vote. But it is every county for themselves when it comes to the actual vote. However, while we're doing the regional transportation plan, as Derek mentioned, it has to be a fiscally constrained plan. So we're going to have a list of projects that won't be very long that will say, this is what we expect to build between now and 2040 with the funding that we have. And then there will be an unconstrained list of projects that we would like to build in all three counties, you know, or on the NDOT system, that we would build if we had the money. And that will certainly, you know, be potentially related to, you know, if this passes in each county, it'll relate to what projects you could be building with those funds if you do receive them. So anyway, the Campo role is limited, but it does relate to our regional transportation plan, of course. And like I said, the key was to make sure that as many people heard what Lee Gibson had to say, because I think it was very valuable.
Which brings us to item I, which is public comment. So once again, call for anybody out in the public who wants to address the Campo board. Seeing none. All right, then we will move to item J, which is for possible action adjournment. Do I have a motion?
So move.
All right, we are adjourned, and the RTC meeting will start in approximately 5 minutes.
called to order the meeting of the Carson City Regional Transportation Commission. It is Wednesday, October 14th, 2015. We are in the Community Center, Sierra Room at 851 East William Street in Carson City. Kathy, can we have a roll call, please?
Chairperson Bonkowski.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Smolenski.
Here.
Mr. Cole.
Here.
Mr. Kimbrough.
Here.
Commissioner McQuarrie.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you, Kathy. Moving on, I will invite any member of the public at this time to come forward to address the Regional Transportation Commission on any matter related to the RTC. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person per topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please request the chair to calendar the matter for a future RTC meeting. No action may be taken on any matter raised under this item until that matter itself has been specifically included on an agenda as an item upon which action may be taken. Is there any public comment at this time? All right, seeing none, we will move on to item C, approval of the minutes. Have you all had a chance to read the minutes? Can I have a motion, please?
I move to approve the minutes of August 12, 2015.
Do we have a second?
I have a question. In looking at the minutes under call to order, I was here, but then it says on the minutes that I left at 5:43. But in reading through the minutes, I made a motion at 5:53. So I don't know how I could have done that if I left. So I was just curious. And at 5:46, I was here for another motion that was made that I voted for.
I'll look into that, Mr. Chairman, get back to you all.
Thank you. So can we modify the motion? The motion maker will modify the motion to reflect that.
Here's the revised motion. I move to approve the minutes of August 12, 2015 with the understanding that there'll be the clerk will review the times when Commissioner Smolenski was here and when he left and revise the minutes accordingly.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes unanimously. We'll move on to item D, agenda management notice. Items on the agenda may be taken out of order. We may combine two or more items for consideration, or we may remove an item from the agenda or delay discussion at any time. Item E, disclosures. Is there any member of the commission that wishes to explain any contact with the public regarding an item on the agenda or business with the commission? I see none, so we will move on to the public meeting items. Item F1 for possible action to adopt a resolution authorizing the filing of an application for a Federal Transit Administration Nevada Department of Transportation grant under 49 USC Chapter 53 and to authorize the RTC chair to sign the Special Section 13 Subsection C Warranty Opinion of Council and the FTA Fiscal Year 2015 Certifications and Assurances sections of the RTC application for 5310 funds. Who's going to take this item?
I'll take it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the announcement of the availability of the full federal fiscal year 2015 apportionment of 5310 grant funds, staff's planning to submit an application to CAMPO, which will then go through to NDOT for the entire apportionment. The FTA 5310 grant program provides funding for public transportation projects intended to meet the needs of seniors and individuals with disabilities. Since the entire JAC fleet is ADA accessible, any funds awarded are planned for use as what is called capitalized operating assistance. This will essentially provide us with a better federal match amount and extend the life of our local matching funds. I'll also note that the applications for this and for the next agenda item would, after approval from the RTC, be presented to the CAMPO board at the next meeting, whenever that may be, as part of the competitive selection process. Any and all applications received will be subject to award of funding by the CAMPO board. And then NDOT will be notified as they are the administrator of the funds per federal regulations. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Are there any questions from the commissioners? Go ahead, Jim.
Graham, in looking through the application process, you had to list the vehicle inventory. And, you know, and one of the questions, vehicle to be replaced, yes or no, all of them are no except for the two. Are those the two that we just donated?
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you. Go ahead, Jim.
There was one other thing. When those vehicles, what is the limits that are put on those vehicles based on year or mileage or both?
The FTA does set limits on both, and it's whichever comes first. So.
And what are those? Do you know right off the top of your head?
It's different for each vehicle type. The two we just retired were 5-year, 150,000 mile.
Thank you. Additional questions from the commissioners? Seeing none, I'll open this up to public comment. If there's anybody in the public, there's no public comment, so I will bring this back to the board for a motion.
I move to adopt a resolution authorizing the filing of an application for a Federal Transit Administration Nevada Department of Transportation grant under 49 U.S.C. Chapter 53 and to authorize the RTC chair to sign the special section 13C warranty opinion of counsel and the FTA fiscal year 2015 certifications and assurances sections of the RTC application for 5310 funds.
Kathy, can we get a resolution number to include?
Resolution number is 2015 RTCR3.
Can the motion maker please include that resolution number as part of his motion?
With the resolution number, oh, it's at the top. Yeah, resolution number 2015-RTC-R3.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Passes unanimously. We'll move on to item F2 for possible action to adopt a resolution authorizing the filing of an application for a Federal Transit Administration Nevada Department of Transportation grant under 49 USC Chapter 53 and to authorize the RTC chair to sign the Special Section 13 Subsection C warranty opinion of counsel and the FTA fiscal year 2015 certifications and assurances sections of the RTC application for 5339 funds. Graham?
Thank you. That's correct. This is obviously very similar to the previous item. Obviously, the only difference is a different funding program, which is 5339. This is also a partial apportionment. The 5339 grant program provides capital funding for buses and bus-related facilities. These funds are used to improve access to JAC bus stops and are typically used to match or to augment city projects, including those using CDBG funds. A couple examples of projects using these funds are Division Street and Monte Rosa, which will be coming up. One other thing I'll note about the availability of these funds is that, as I mentioned, it's a partial apportionment. The first half was previously awarded to the RTC, so this application is for the remainder of the fiscal year apportionment. And because there was no long-term transportation bill passed beginning in fiscal year 2015, short-term extensions were approved, and thus the reason for the release of partial apportionments. With that, I'll take my questions.
Are there any questions from the commissioners? Go ahead, Mark.
Clarification. How does Campo come into this when it's kind of Carson RTC? How does that
We're
become
on RTC
part?
Now.
I know, but it says as determined by the Carson Area Metropolitan Planning Organization.
So the funds go through Campo, but Campo's got to make them available to public transportation providers in the area or private nonprofits. So we put out the announcement that the funds are available. This is the application, which, if approved, will be taken to the next Campo meeting, and then any other entities applying for it, they'll go in front of Campo as well, and Campo will be able to, you know, portion out the funds at their discretion.
So before Campo, how were these monies obtained for Carson City, or were they?
They are determined by the FTA that that Campo is the direct recipient of the funds, but that they should be, you know, awarded on a competitive selection process.
If I may, just as an example, last time when we did 5310, the fire department actually applied for a portion of those funds, and it was up to Campo to decide that the Carson City RTC had applied for the whole amount, and the fire department had applied for a partial amount, and it was up to Campo to decide how to divide that money between the fire department and the Carson City RTC. So in this realm, we, the RTC, are one of multiple potential applicants. So.
Additional questions from the commissioners? Seeing none, I'll open this item up to public comment. I see no public comment, so I'll bring it back to the commission and entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. Do we need a resolution number?
Yes, it should be 4.
What's that?
It should be 4. Okay. 15 RTCR 4.
Okay, so. Okay. I move to adopt resolution 2015 RTCR4, authorizing the filing of an application for a Federal Transit Administration Nevada Department of Transportation grant under 49 USC Chapter 53, and to authorize the RTC chair to sign the special section 13C warranty opinion of council in the FTA fiscal year 2015 certifications and assurances section of the RTC application for 5339 funds.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Passes unanimously. We are now on item F3 for possible action to accept the work as completed, to accept the contract summary as presented, and to approve the release of final payment in the amount of $11,559.03 for contract 1415-183. Titled Little Lane Street Improvement Project to A&K Earth Movers, Inc. Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This one's pretty straightforward, as you read in the subject title. It's just to accept the work that was completed and release a final payment. This project went really well. It was under budget and on time, actually, I think a little ahead of schedule. And Patrick pointed out to me that it's the first road reconstruction we've done with RTC funds since Roop Street. So we're excited to see this project go through.
Does anybody have any questions for Dan? All right. Seeing no questions from the commissioners, I'll open this up for public comment. I see no public comment, so I'll bring it back to the commission and entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to accept the work as completed, to accept the contract summary as presented, and to approve the release of final payment in the amount of $11,559.03 for contract number 1415-183, titled Little Lane Street Improvement Project to A&K Earth Movers, Inc.
Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, vote aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, vote nay. Passes unanimously. We are now on item F4. For possible action to authorize the transportation manager to execute an interlocal agreement between Carson City RTC and the Nevada Department of Transportation for the Carson City Traffic Controller Upgrade Project, and to authorize the transportation manager to sign future amendments to this agreement regarding time extensions. Ben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're pleased to report that NDOT is proposing to provide us with 66 traffic controllers to upgrade signalized intersections throughout the area. And this also includes locations in Lyon and Douglas counties where we maintain signals there as well. And our staff will be responsible for installing the traffic controllers. We'll have a year or two complete this. So, you know, we could kind of phase it in. It's not going to be all at once. And basically, as a says in the summary here, that the upgrade in the traffic controllers will enhance the operations of the traffic signals, increase security, and basically improve control and monitoring of the signals. And as I understand it, this we're running on software that is more current than the hardware that's in our traffic signals. So there's a little disconnect there, and this will bring our traffic signals up to our software standards and make it a more seamless and running more seamlessly and smoothly. So I'll do my best to answer any questions. I'm not a traffic operations engineer, but be happy to entertain any. Thank you.
Any questions? Go ahead, Jim.
I have one. I know you, looking at the suggested list of where these ATC controllers are going to be put, listed, there's some of these abbreviations or acronyms that I was just wondering if we could get a clarification. You gave me the one on the SUPE, I guess it's called the standardized.
SCUI, the single
the
point.
SCUI, yeah. SCUI, whatever. The other one I was just wondering is if a definition of what LEIP is.
Unfortunately, I do not know that, but we could certainly follow up with our traffic signals technician, and I can get you an answer back.
That would be nice. I mean, because looking at this, the LEIP, and then you get the SPUI, and then there's some that just say luminaries, a number of luminaries with advanced this or that. I was just kind of curious what the difference of these controllers that are going in.
Well, yeah, if I may, I mean, this list was obviously compiled, and, you know, for example, the luminaries, that's just more information for those. We could put how many lights we have at our ones in Carson City too, but it's frankly immaterial to the fact that it's getting a new controller. You know, and the same with the, you know, the advanced, it says that the advanced warning, those are the ones that are in the more rural locations that have speeds over 50 miles an hour with those blinking lights to warn you. Sorry, we don't know what LEIP stands for.
It's okay. If you can just get the definitions and then send those out to us, that'd be great.
Thank you. This is the one that takes pictures of your license plate.
We don't have any of those.
Worried about your points? All right. Are there any additional questions from the commission? Seeing none, I'll open this up to public comment. There's no public comment. So I would like to go on record and thank NDOT for providing these to us. We do appreciate it. And I will entertain a motion. Go ahead, Mark.
I move to authorize the transportation manager to execute an interlocal agreement between Carson City RTC and the Nevada Department of Transportation for the Carson City Traffic Controller Upgrade Project, and to authorize the transportation manager to sign future amendments to this agreement regarding time extensions.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, vote aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, vote nay. It passes unanimously. We are on to the G section of our agenda, internal communications and administrative matters, non-action items, G1, street operations report.
Lots of good work in here, but there's just one thing I want to point out, and that was that under grading and shoulder maintenance, it mentions, and we're always at least more than a month behind here, but it mentions the Sierra Vista flash flood event. I'm sure the member Kimbrough knows all about. Removed sediment and debris from the roadway in various locations. That just reminded me to tell you that since we last met, we did have our meetings, our first scoping meetings with Central Federal Land Staff out of Colorado regarding the FLAP, Federal Lands Access Program. I know what those are, so I'm going to tell you. Funds, and I can just report that while they are certainly, you know, going through everything back in Colorado, they were very positive meetings. They didn't see any, they told us they didn't see any red flags, looked like a good project to them. So it's a matter of, you know, reviewing the budgetary figures and going back to the project decision committee. Is that the PDC in December? And then, which is a three-member group of NACO and NDOT deputy director and somebody from Central Federal Lands, where we'll get the word for the proceeding with the project. So anyway, we'll be back in touch on that one. But there's yet another pointing out of why we need to get the project done.
Right, and just a note, under stormwater activities, under sediment removed from ditches, that's 360 yards of material.
That's right.
Any questions from the commissioners?
Okay.
I see none, so let's see. Item G2, project status report.
I'm actually going to start with a couple of projects that are in design right now that I want to make sure you're aware of that will be in this report next month. First is the Empire Area CDBG, Community Development Block Grant, an FTA-funded sidewalk project. It's going to be primarily on Monte Rosa. That is about just about finished with design, and we expect to bring it back to you for award in January for construction in spring. And we are also working feverishly to put together the wide crack repair project that we discussed at our previous meeting, using funds that had been transferred over from the general fund. So we're working hard on putting that together, and you'll be seeing that in the near future as well.
Patrick, before you go on from that, can you also just tell the public if they have road conditions that they want to report, how they would use Carson City Connect to do that?
Absolutely. Yes, part of our commission, our directive to follow is to be as responsive as possible to citizen complaints, knowing that we can't meet all the needs out there, but we certainly have gotten comments already from the public about specific roads that have this wide type of crack, and we've been out looking at them. If anybody wants to report other roads that have wide cracks in them, we're all ears. There is if you go to carson.org, there's a big red button on the right that says Carson City Connect, and you have the ability to enter information really about anything you want to share in the city, but including road conditions. But you have a wide variety of issues you can report there. But and that's a wonderful method to do it. There's also an app that you can get for your iPhone or Android phone. And additionally, if somebody doesn't want to go that route, they can always contact us at Public Works via email or phone, and we're happy to get those comments that way as well. Let's see, and then moving on to the projects that we do have in the report here. The East-West Water Transmission Main we're having our pre-construction conference with the contractor next week, and we expect to start work on that project in the first week of November. That's a water main that's going to certainly affect traffic primarily on Washington Street from about the library and Roop over to Phillips Street. The William Street US 50 path improvements, that work is now complete, and we are preparing to close it out, and we'll be removing that from this report because we'll be bringing it to this body for a closeout. The Long Street sidewalk improvements, you can take a look at on Long Street between Carson and Stewart. That is nearly complete. That also will be going away pretty soon because it'll be completed and closed out as well. Clear Creek Avenue Sanitary Sewer Extension, there's been impact down there for a couple of months, and I know we're looking to be finished out. The road's already been paved. Last I saw, there was a little bit of construction work to do, and I believe the striping is this week, so that will be completed and reopen the traffic here this month. Division Street, we're also having a pre-construction conference with the contractor next week, and we are looking to get started on that as soon as possible after that meeting early next week. That will also impact traffic on Division Street, certainly. The Carson City Freeway Multi-Use Path is under design. Proceeding on through design, not going to go to construction until certainly next year. And then we've got Long Line at the back because that's a recurring one, but that is I will say that is complete, but I will put a asterisk behind that. We actually did get a couple of requests for additional long line striping that are in the Carson City Connect system, and those long lines were completed just this last week, one on the intersection of Molly and Corbett, and another one on Laurel from Pinion Hills over to Deer Run Road over on the far east side of town. We did get those requests. We were able to get those done, and our residents have expressed their appreciation for a couple little at the end there.
Patrick, can you tell us, if you know, or Darren, maybe it'll be you, on the east-west water transmission line, what is the plan for going across Carson Street? Is it going to be to drill under, or are they going to cut the pavement? And trench across?
They're going to cut the pavement and trench across due to the fact that we're going to be tearing it up for the project next year. Prior to, we were going to bore underneath, but under the circumstances, they're going to cut it.
Are there any other questions from the commissioners?
No.
All right, then we will move on to G3, future agenda items.
As I mentioned under the Campo meeting, if we can avoid having a Campo meeting, we will, because next month's RTC meeting will start with a one-item joint meeting of the RTC and the RAC, the Redevelopment Authority Citizens Committee, to review the 90% plans in the downtown project. So we're looking forward to having our friends at RAC join us for that. And then we have other items, including a couple of contract closeouts that are pending. We expect the award of the wide crack repair project. We have an extension for the advertising on our transit vehicles, a revenue contract that benefits us. And importantly, I want to note that because the second Wednesday of next month is a holiday, the next meeting will not be on November 11th, but it will be on Tuesday, November 17th. Same time, 4:30, same room, but it will be Tuesday, November 17th for the next RTC meeting.
Are there any future agenda items from the commissioners?
Don't forget that.
I see none. Nothing? Okay. Then we will move on to item H, commission comments. Are there any commissioners that have reports or comments?
I just wanted to ask if... before the next meeting of the 90%, is there a place I could go to look at those 800 pages of plans? Not to look at all 800, but maybe look at the landscaping sections and the amenities versus all the engineering pages? Because that's what they said last time. They didn't want to bring 800 pages or whatever. I think it was 800 pages. But I'd be really curious. It's hard to visualize without looking at plans, which I've done before. Is that possible?
Well, we have information on Carson Proud, but I don't know that there's enough detail on Carson Proud for what you're looking for. So I'll be in touch with you tomorrow to figure out you can see whatever you want to see.
Thanks.
All right, final public comment. Are there any? No final public comment, so I will take a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
We are adjourned. Thank you.